You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into The Frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Welcome. Today on the Turley Frequency, we meet Elizabeth Hebe, who will be talking all things manatee, a creature that may be closer than you think. We swim those murky waters with Elizabeth in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. Finally today, we get the latest from inside the Beltway with Mr. Mike Church, the King Dude himself, when we drain some of that DC swamp in the final segment. Okay, with all this good stuff, I guess we'd better get this show on the road. Hello and welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Turley Frequency. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, welcoming you on board the good ship Archangel Radio for another 2 hours of action-packed... Action-packed radio. Well, it's sort of action-packed. You know, we do our best. We really, really try on this show. I don't care what people say in emails to Ellen and the others who run this station. We really, really do try on this show. And as always, I'm accompanied in this venture, this adventure, with my trusty co-pilot, Reed Hodges, who, Reed and I, you've got to think, we are the radiophonic equivalent of Batman and Robin. We go into Gotham City and we beat up Joker, Penguin, and all the baddies, or they beat us up. Depends on how it works out each day. So let's check in with Reed. Let's find out if all our systems are ready to go and we're ready for the adventure, which is the Turley Frequency.
Give me a go, no go for launch. Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go flying.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flight.
Ecom.
We're go flight.
GNC.
We're go.
Tell me.
Go.
Control.
Go flight.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go flight.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
Wonderful. It sounds like we're all set, Reed.
Yes, we're ready, Kevin.
It's just a shame that I hadn't prepared any show today.
Although the manatees are throwing off our weight calculations a little bit, so not sure if we'll be able to blast off with all these manatees in our cargo hold.
Oh, I don't know if you're allowed to blast off any manatees these days. They're probably protected under some spurious regulation.
I'm sure that they are.
In Dauphin Island. Anyway, it's good to have your company this Tuesday morning because just be me and Reed here and we'd be talking to each other, you know. It's nice to have you with us. And wherever you are, wherever you're listening to us, whether it's at home, at work, in a hospital, in a bar, behind bars, wherever you are very, very welcome to this edition of the show. Now, talking of work, have you heard the latest? Now, I don't know about you, but I had never heard of Zoom. Yes, Zoom, the conference calling facility, I think it terms itself. I'd never heard of it until the pandemic struck. I'd been aware of Skype and a couple of other ways in which you communicate with people in group calls, but I'd never heard of Zoom. And then suddenly everybody was talking about Zoom. Do you remember? We were all confined to barracks, and Zoom was the only way for us to communicate with anybody, or so it seemed.
I remember, Kevin, and to me at the time, it seemed like a little bit of a marketing ploy, because I just knew of some other video call applications that people used, and Zoom was not the one that I knew of people using. And then when the COVID lockdowns were going on and everybody's talking about Zoom, I remember just thinking, like, man, why are we talking about this particular one? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Reed, that somehow somebody in Zoom started the pandemic as a marketing venture?
Well, they may have benefited from it. I don't want to put it on the people at Zoom, but
probably best not to, because they'd probably sue us.
There's no way that their stock price shot up during that time. I mean, so it was certainly something that it worked in their favor a little bit more than other companies. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, why Zoom in particular?
Well, let's leave that question hanging there, Reed. It's a good question. But like you and like me, no doubt all our listeners enjoyed their Zoom meetings very much. I said you enjoyed your Zoom. No, we didn't enjoy it at all, did we? Meeting at work, yeah, do you remember? Do you remember all those, you're on mute, you're on mute. Do you remember that endless chorus? Or with families, do you remember? People trying to have a jolly time because we were all locked up down a computer screen. It was just dreadful. Dreadful. The memories that we've tried to block out ever since. Well, remember we were told that Zoom meetings and that sort of conferencing was the way of the future, right? And people like you and me, who liked working with other human beings and liked working in offices and studios and places where we could communicate with each other, we were 19th century. We were old hat. And you and me, we needed to get with a project, you remember? The future was bright and shiny. Well, it's funny how things can come back to haunt you. Take a listen to this.
An essential part of the work from home environment during the pandemic is now mandating that its own workers return to the office. Zoom is asking workers who live within 50 miles of a company office to return in person for at least 2 days a week. Zoom is hoping to encourage more employee interaction. The hybrid schedule comes after Zoom reported a loss of $100 billion in market value. Zoom also laid off more than 1,000 workers earlier this year.
So there you have it. That's right. Can you believe it? Zoom, of all people, are now tussling with their employees to get them back into the office. They can't cope with remote working. And this is Zoom, right? The people who told us all that this was the way of the future. They're realizing that human nature is as it is. Pandemic or no pandemic, conference call via Zoom or no conference call via Zoom, human nature doesn't change. And if you've got the chance to sit with your feet up at home and nobody notices, you're probably going to take that option. So the managers are saying, no, everybody's got to get back to the Zoom headquarters. Good luck with that, I say. We'll watch that one. But it does make me smile when I hear Zoom has its problems with remote working. Now, there are some people at the moment who are nowhere near their workplaces. People who cannot get to work at all. And they are, of course, Hollywood's actors. And given the current strike, even if they could work from home, they wouldn't be allowed to. There is this ongoing strike between Tinseltown's writers, actors, and associated others with studio heads, studio execs, and all the rest. Today, that dispute, that industrial dispute, is entering its 100th day, 100 days without red carpets, 100 days without Hollywood premieres, etc., etc. Can we live? Can we cope? I just don't know. And the word on the street, the word on the Hollywood boulevards, is that there is nowhere near a resolution of this ongoing industrial conflict. But, and here's the thing, you know that there's an old saying that every cloud has a silver lining. You ever heard that expression? Sure you have. Well, it seems that there is a silver lining, even in this cloud which hovers over the Hollywood Hills. Take a listen to this news report.
The Hollywood strikes have caused a major boom in another industry. Actors and writers in the US are on strike over pay. The industrial action has shut down production on major films and TV shows, but it's ramped up activity in another profession. Cosmetic surgery. Dr. Ben Talley from the Beverly Hills Center for Plastic Surgery told TMZ he'd been working 7 days a week just to keep up with demand. With more time to rest and recover thanks to the strikes, more and more stars are looking to go under the knife. The plastic surgeon even said he had a contingency plan in place depending on whether workers decided to strike or not. If they did, he'd book full facelifts, and if they didn't, they'd be in for skin-tightening treatments only. And with no end in sight for the strikes, it looks like the plastic surgeons will be staying busy.
Well, there you go. Plastic surgery is having a boom time in Hollywood and elsewhere. Can you imagine it? So they can't work. They can't go into the studios. They can't be seen to be doing any promotional work or anything like that. So what are the actors doing? They're going under the knife. That's right. The only sword play that is happening in Hollywood at the moment is the sound of cosmetic surgeons. Ouch. That sounds really painful. Oh. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? You couldn't make this stuff up, could you? I mean, Zoom are getting their workers back because of remote working. And in Hollywood, out-of-work actors are having a boom time with their cosmetic surgeons or having a rare old time slicing away at whatever time is left with them. Now, leaving all of that aside for one moment, you know that we started yesterday on this show our novena. Our novena in the run-up to August 15th. And don't worry if you forgot all about it, because we're doing it for you here live on air. In a way, it's a little bit of a practice run for our consecration to the Sacred Heart through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which we hope to fully engage with in due course. So at the moment, we are praying the ancient prayer to Our Lady, which is as follows. So you ready for this? Ready for our novena prayer? This is our moment of communal prayer together in the run-up to August 15th. Now, before I say it, I want you to just, if you're not driving, I want you to close your eyes. Go on, you can do it. Just close them just for a moment. And I want you to think about what it is you want from Our Lady through her intercession, right? It will come from God, obviously. But through the powerful intercession of our Blessed Mother, what is it you want? Just one thing. Be specific. Be specific, okay? One thing. It can be a relationship that needs healing. It can be a job that needs finding. It can be a transition to school or to college or the military or something like that, that goes smoothly. It can be some fear, some anxiety, some worry that you have, that it somehow disappears or is sorted out in some way. Or it could be something very serious, like that illness you have. Or that prognosis that you're about to receive. Or the appointment you're about to go to. Or the surgery you are about to have done to you. Just for a moment, think about that. Now let's pray together and read. When I finish, if you would say amen on behalf of our audience. We fly to thy protection, O Holy Mother of God. Do not despise our petitions in our necessities, but deliver us always from all dangers. O glorious and blessed Virgin.
Amen.
Thank you, Reed. So that's it. We've done it. We've done it. It's day two of our novena, and it's going to be a good one. Now, for anybody out there who thinks that novenas are, how can I put it, something ancient, something for the not very well catechized, something for children, something for the unsophisticated, let me tell you what happened at the weekend. Now, do you remember about a month or so ago, we talked about that gentleman. His name was David Rodriguez Nieto. Do you remember that amazing experience with a novena? I will probably tell the story again because it's a great story and it needs telling. That woke me up to the power of a novena, partly because David was thanking God that the novena was going to work. Do you remember? Telling all his friends. God was going to answer his prayers. And this was a man in a desperate medical situation. I'll tell you more about that another day. Well, the weekend, do you remember we had World Youth Day? And do you remember part of World Youth Day took place in Fatima? Do you remember we talked about this? Do you remember we talked about it last week? We did a lot on World Youth Day. And one of the more hopeful signs of World Youth Day was, of course, that it was happening in Fatima and that Fatima, or sorry, in Portugal, and Portugal is the home of Fatima, and Fatima is where Our Lady appeared to three children back in 1917. And I don't know about you, but that gave me a certain hope, a certain joy that World Youth Day, there was going to be a lot of good fruit that was going to come from it. Regardless of all the bad stuff that was happening, all the stuff we read about and hear about, maybe too much, there was going to be some good stuff. Now, I told you at the weekend I started getting messages, do you remember, on my phone? The messages were personal. They were not press releases. They were not people sending me articles. Because the story I'm about to tell you, I know the family. Now, I think that's as much as I can say at this point. I may one day tell you more. But I may have actually met the young woman at the center of this. Because this involves a 16-year-old Spanish pilgrim to World Youth Day who had her sight miraculously recovered after receiving the Holy Eucharist during Mass at Fatima, Portugal, last Saturday. Now, this story has been reported around the world, so I'm not breaking any confidences here. But I wish I could share with you some of the messages, the voice messages that were from her family prior to this and posted. So this little girl called Jemima, she's 16 years old. She traveled to Lisbon from Madrid, where she lives. And during that time, she was doing a novena to Our Lady of Snows, whose feast day it was last Saturday, August 5th. Now, for 2.5 years, Jemima had been suffering a loss of sight due to a myopia problem that left her with 95% vision loss. And I remember a friend talking to me about this, about the family that I knew and about and all of this, and how sad it was that this little girl was losing her sight. On the morning of August 5th, just as her novena had finished, and remember, this is a little girl who was learning Braille to say her novena. Just think about that. She was learning Braille so she could pray this novena to Our Lady. And when she was praying the rosary at the site of Fatima, after she had received communion, she said that she received a great gift from Our Lady. She said she began to cry a lot. On the last day of the novena, she'd already been crying because she wanted God to cure her so much. She's 16 years old. She's losing her sight. Her whole life is ahead of her. She's desperate. She goes to Our Lady. She asks her to cure her for a miracle, just as we pray for miracles every day here at 9 a.m. Central Time. And suddenly she opened her eyes, and I'm going to quote her, "I could see perfectly." It was overwhelming. Very much thanks must be given for the miracle, because I saw the altar, the tabernacle. All my girlfriends were there. I could see them perfectly. In addition, she was able to read the novena prayer that she had been praying through Braille. And now she was able to read it with her eyes. I love the final quote from this press release because it's so much a 16-year-old girl. And if you have a young 16-year-old girl, you will know a daughter or a granddaughter. You'll know this. She says, "I'm super happy." I'm super happy. Well, Jemima, we are super happy for you. because you, my little friend, are another witness that God is good, but he's also mighty. Now, I have one final thing to say before we go to break. For anybody who wants a miracle, you need to get with the project. You need to come with us 9 a.m. Central Time here on this show and pray with us for a miracle. And you never know. You just never know. Okay, when we come back, we are going to be manatee hunting. Yep, manatee hunting live here on Archangel Radio. Stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency. Back after these words. Charlie Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It is great to have your company this morning. I hope wherever you are, whatever you're doing on this Tuesday, I hope it's working out well for you. Now, if you're enjoying the warm summer weather on the northern Gulf of Mexico coast, you may just spot one of the coast's most charismatic seasonal visitors. What's that, I hear you cry? Well, it's called the West Indian Manatee. So far this year, researchers at the Dauphin Island Sea Labs Manatee Sighting Network have received more than 150 sightings of these unusual creatures, coming from right across Alabama, Mississippi, and the Florida Panhandle. Manatees typically begin their migration to the northern Gulf Coast in early April, when the waters are warming, and they return to central Florida in October as the water cools. Now, to find out more about these charismatic creatures, we are delighted to be joined by Elizabeth Hebe from the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, and she joins me down the line this morning. Elizabeth, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I hope you're not going to take this the wrong way, Elizabeth, but before I was asked to interview you, I'd never really heard of manatees. Now, there aren't a lot of them swimming around the Thames here in London. So do you want to give us a kind of thumbnail sketch as to just how wonderful, interesting, and it may be obscure in some ways this creature is?
Yeah, absolutely. So manatees are definitely a unique creature. So they are marine mammals. Just like us, they breathe air, they are warm-blooded, they have hair on their bodies, but unlike us, they live in the water, so they actually spend most of their time holding their breath underwater. But there are three species of manatees in the world. As you mentioned, the species we have here in the United States is called the West Indian manatee. And some people might be familiar with other types of marine mammals, such as dolphins, whales, seals, sea lions. But manatees are actually not that closely related to those creatures. Their closest living relative is actually the elephant. So they're definitely very unique, very large. I think people are surprised just how big they get. So they can be up to 2,000 pounds and 10 to 12 feet long. We love seeing them here on the Gulf Coast in the summertime.
Now, you've already intrigued me, Elizabeth, because you say that their closest relative is the elephant. I mean,
yes.
There's a bit of a difference between what I've seen, certainly online, of manatees and what an elephant looks like. I mean, what is the connection there? How does that sort of, what is, talk to me.
Yeah, so you can see some features that are similar. So if you actually look at their toenails, manatees have toenails on the end of their flippers that are very much like an elephant's toenails. They also have prehensile lips, so they eat vegetation. They're herbivores, and so they're constantly grabbing seagrass and different types of vegetation with their lips, and it's very much like the end of an elephant's trunk. So if you see up close or maybe see a video of a manatee eating, you could kind of see how that's like an elephant's trunk.
Right. And do manatees, do they appear in circuses as well?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. But so they are close to elephants. Now, I can't say I've ever seen a toenail of a manatee, but I'll take your word for this, Elizabeth. So we've got these sort of legendary creatures. Now, it's also, you've intrigued me a little bit because they're also sort of connected to whales. Are they in that sort of mammal type, aqua mammal sort of family? Is that how we would define them zoologically?
Yes, absolutely. So they are marine mammals. Yes. So they are like whales and dolphins in that, you know, they're not fish, even though they live in the water, they're not fish. They're not reptiles. They are warm blooded. They breathe air. They give birth to live young. So they don't lay eggs. And they actually nurse their babies. So they feed their babies milk for the first couple years of their life. So those are all things that marine mammals have in common.
Wow. Have there been any books written about manatees? I mean, is there a sort of Moby manatee out there somewhere?
I don't know about a Moby manatee, but there are definitely some great, you know, scientific literature out there. I also know of some great children's books about manatees. We actually had a manatee we rescued in Alabama several years ago, and we had a book written about her story and how we were able to rescue her and relocate her back to Florida when she was in distress here in Alabama. So, yeah, there's lots of cool books out there about manatees, and of course, you know, there's always great information online as well. Hopefully you can maybe find a picture of those toenails somewhere.
Absolutely. But I mean, maybe there's an opening there for you, Elizabeth. Maybe the first book to be written about the manatee is still awaiting somebody like yourself to pick up your pen and write it. But on a more serious point, I mean, you are part of the Manatee Sighting Network, which is based at Dauphin Island. And we've had a number of communications with the good folks at Dauphin Island on different marine animals. We've been talking about sharks a lot down there and that sort of things. Are manatees threatened by things like sharks that are also in? I mean, are there predators for manatees?
There really are not. So we do get questions about sharks and also around here alligators. But typically, manatees don't spend a ton of time in the same waters as sharks. They spend more time up in rivers and embayments, and less time out in open water where there's sharks. Around here, they definitely overlap with alligators. But the truth is that their biggest defense is just their size. You know, manatees, like I said, can be 2,000 pounds. They're really big animals. So, the, you know, predators that are out there, the sharks and alligators, can typically find a much easier meal than to mess with a manatee. We're actually, you know, as humans, one of their biggest threats. So that is why they are protected in our area is because humans can have such a major impact on them.
So talk to me a little bit, Elizabeth, about the relationship between human beings or humanity over the years and the manatee. Humanity and the manatee, there's a nice little sort of runs off the tongue. But seriously, talk to me about that. I mean, are we friendly to them? Do we eat them? Do we wear part of their bodies as jewelry? Or how's it been over the centuries?
Yeah, so historically in the U.S., manatees were hunted by native peoples. We know that from historical records, you know, finding at archaeological sites, their bones. Thankfully, in the U.S., manatees are now protected, so there is no hunting, poaching of manatees. It's still an issue in other parts of the world where there are other species of manatees, such as in the Caribbean, South America, and in Africa. So hunting and poaching is still an issue for manatees in some parts of the world. Here in the U.S., one of the biggest threats to manatees is actually in our modern times is boat strikes. So people that, you know, are out on the water driving around, manatees, like I said, are very large and they don't move very quickly. So it's very hard for them to get out of the way of an approaching vessel. So being hit by boats is the leading cause of death that we incur, you know, humans incur on manatees. And that's part of our mission here at the Dauphin Island Sea Lab and with our Manatee Sighting Network is to raise awareness and let people know, you know, that we have manatees in our area. And that it's really important to keep an extra eye open when you're out on the water.
Absolutely. I mean, when you say they were hunted in centuries past, I mean, was that for food or was it for their kind of blubber, for oil, or you know, was it just simply to eat them?
Yeah,
I mean, are they edible? I mean, do they cook well?
Well, thankfully, I don't know and don't intend to find out. But they are hunted for their food, and that is still true in some parts of the world. You know, they're subsistence hunted. So typically, that is. There are of course, sometimes there are trophies that come along with hunting. You know, their bones are used for different things, like you mentioned, like jewelry and you know, kind of those trophies. But typically it is subsistence hunting that has historically been why manatees are hunted, for food. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, they are protected at the moment in the United States. Does that mean that, for example, you couldn't serve up a manatee steak tomorrow with your French fries?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So they are
gotcha.
protected in the U.S. Yep.
They are. Okay. So if anybody's listening to this, we're not suggesting that you go out and have a manatee sandwich today.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. Definitely not.
Definitely not. Okay. Listen, Elizabeth, we're going to go for a quick break. Are you okay taking any questions from our audience about these wonderful
sure.
creatures when we come back?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, listen, I'm with Elizabeth Hebe, who is part of the Dauphin Island Sea Labs Manatee Sighting Network. And they've received over 150 sightings just this year from around Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. If you've seen one or you've got questions about a manatee, well, now's your chance. 888-928-0881 or text me direct, 251-928-2111. We'll be back hunting the manatee, but not for food. Just a moment. Stay tuned to the Charlie Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, and I am in a fascinating conversation with Elizabeth Hebe, who is one of the researchers down at Dauphin Islands Sea Labs Manatee Sighting Network, where she has been sighting over 150 of these wonderful creatures who seem to be around Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida at this time of year. And Elizabeth joins me down the line this morning. Elizabeth, we have some questions in on text. I'll just run through some of them. The first one, maybe an obvious one, do alligators bother manatees?
No, not that we usually see. So as I mentioned earlier, even though they do spend time in the same habitat, manatees are just so large that alligators really just leave them alone. Manatees don't have any natural predators. So even the big alligators can find an easier meal than a manatee.
I mean, you were alluding to that in the last segment, Elizabeth, and I'm a bit surprised by that. You know, I mean, the impression we get from lay people like me who know nothing about science and marine science in particular is that the shark would be going around and the alligators eating everything they can get their hands on. But it's not quite like that, is it?
No, it's not quite like that. You know, I'm definitely not an expert on marine predators and freshwater predators. But, you know, these animals typically have, you know, they're part of the food chain. So they have prey that they typically, you know, go after, and manatees are just, you know, not on the menu.
Wonderful. Okay, another question. When do manatees come to Alabama? So do we know exactly, just focusing on Alabama for the moment and the coastline there down around Dauphin Island, do we know exactly when they arrive each year?
Pretty typically we do, and that's based on data that we've collected through our manatee sighting network and also through attaching satellite tags to manatees and following their movements that way. So typically about April is when they start arriving in Alabama waters, but we do get sightings earlier in the year as well. And then they start to leave in about October, November to head back to Florida for the winter time. But we've actually seen an increase in the number of late season sightings in recent years. So sightings into November and December. So it seems that manatees are actually staying a little longer in Alabama than they have historically. So, you know, even though a lot of people, you know, think of Florida when they think of manatees, we see them in Alabama for the majority of the year, some years.
That's because Alabama is such a welcoming state, I would imagine, Elizabeth.
Yes, we have lots of, you know, great resources for them here. So primarily food resources. They go where the food is. We're you know, known for some good food.
Sweet home manatee. Okay, now this is a related question, Elizabeth. Are manatees in Alabama lost? I suppose what the question is have they accidentally come to Alabama by mistake on their way somewhere else?
That is such a great question, and I love the opportunity to answer it, because before we started our manatee sighting network, that's exactly what scientists and managers thought. They thought that manatees that came to Alabama must be lost. They were considered classified as an accidental visitor to Alabama. But we've shown through our research that the same manatees actually come back year after year. And then we have new manatees coming every year. So they're definitely not lost. They're definitely coming here on purpose. And now, thanks to our research, manatees are actually protected and classified as endangered in the state of Alabama. They're considered a priority species. So the state is actually, you know, taking the initiative to help protect these animals, you know, thanks to our research. So yeah, definitely not lost.
Absolutely. How could anybody be lost coming to Alabama? You've prejudged the next question here, Elizabeth, which was really about the protection of manatees in Alabama. Do you want to talk a little bit about the history of that? When did that take place, and how is it enacted?
Right. So there's manatees are protected both at the state level and at the national level, at the federal level. So in the 1970s, there were a couple of legislative actions at the federal level. Then people might be familiar with the Marine Mammal Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act, which manatees are protected under both of those. And then at the state level, they're considered an endangered species and are protected as what we call a non-game species. So an animal that you don't hunt, which we already talked about. But basically, you know, what that means is that anything that interferes with their natural behavior is considered harassment. So we want to always give manatees plenty of space. You know, we've talked about some of the obvious things, the hunting, which isn't really, you know, a problem that we face, but things like, you know, getting too close to them, maybe trying to give them food or water, or try to chase them, try to swim with them. You know, these can interfere with their feeding behaviors, with their social behaviors. It can get them to be too used to people and start approaching people, which can put them in harm's way. So, you know, we always tell people, you know, and we try to be educators first. We're not the guys out there with the badges that are telling you, you know, this is illegal, don't do that. We just want to educate people that, you know, the best thing you can do is give manatees plenty of space and observe them from a distance. And then, you know, they can just undertake their natural behaviors and stay safe. That way we can safely share our waterways with them.
Yeah. So the best advice you're giving in a nutshell, Elizabeth, is, I mean, humanity should stay clear of the manatee.
Yes. I love that.
Okay, so just leave them alone. They're wonderful creatures to observe and rejoice in their wondrous nature, but they don't need feeding, they don't need patting, they don't need swimming with, and they probably don't need a photograph, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you can take pictures from a distance, that's always
gotcha.
You know, great. People love to take photos and videos, and we, you know, we receive photos and videos on it from members of the public when they report their sightings to us. But you know, you're not trying to get in there close and take a selfie with the manatee. You know, just observe and enjoy from a distance.
Absolutely. Now, a question here, which is, I think, related to something you mentioned, which a lot of people may not have been aware of. The question is, will boating be prohibited in my area if someone reports a manatee sighting? Now, that's a really good question, because if somebody has a boat and they're a bit worried about striking a manatee, but they're also worried about reporting one, because then are there restrictions on what people can do with their boats in that area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is a great question, and one we get fairly often. And, you know, because there are places in Florida where there are speed limits and areas, because there are hundreds of manatees that gather at some of these, particularly at warm water sites like natural springs and power plants. And so there are protective measures, speed limits, and no wake zones in place to protect the manatees. We don't have anything like that in the Northern Gulf in Alabama. And that is, frankly, not my job and our job as a research team.
No.
So, if we the short answer is that we don't, you know, have any say on how no wake zones are put in and how speed limits are enforced as scientists and researchers. But also, you know, I think it's a good idea to just know where the manatees are and keep a lookout for them. There are relatively few manatees, maybe several dozen at any one time in Alabama in the summertime. So it's unlikely that we would have any kind of speed limits enforced simply because of the number of manatees we have. But, you know, it's better to be proactive and, you know, be aware that the manatees are there, and then we won't have an issue to need to enforce.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody would deliberately hit a manatee in a boat. I mean, for a start, it would mess your boat up something bad, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's exactly what we find is that, you know, people don't have, you know, generally don't have bad intentions. They just don't always know how to, you know, prevent harm.
So what should you do, Elizabeth? If anybody's listening and they're down in Dauphin Island and they're listening to this, if you are out in your boat and you accidentally hit one of these beautiful creatures, what is there a procedure to report it, or what happens?
Yep, that is part of what we do. So reporting to us is the first step, and we respond to any sick, injured, already deceased manatees in both Alabama and Mississippi. So we have a 24-hour reporting hotline that you would call. Someone monitors that line all times of the day and night. So it will get through to one of our responders, and then we can assess the situation and see how we need to respond. But definitely always just calling that number and getting in touch with a trained responder as soon as possible is the best thing you can do.
I'm impressed, Elizabeth. It's 24 hours a day. I mean, if that means if somebody phones at 3 a.m., you'll be on the end of that phone picking it up and rushing out to help the manatee.
Well, I'll definitely be on the end of the phone. I may be a little sleepy, but I'll definitely be on the end of the phone.
Wow.
But, you know, it's as conditions allow. You know, we always, you know, have to think of human safety and animal safety. So it is unlikely that, you know, we would be able to, you know, safely respond in the middle of the night, but we can, you know, get out there at the break of dawn and see what we're dealing with. But just having that information as quickly as possible lets us start to get the ball rolling on assessing what we need to do.
And at the end of this conversation, we'll be giving you all the contact details for Elizabeth, so you can contact her at 3 a.m. just to check that the line is working.
Thank you.
Not. Now, there's a very interesting observation. Somebody's texted in saying, I saw them out water skiing. So that's nice. But then there's a dash and they say, do they bite? Good question.
Well, that is a good question. Well, I guess the cardinal rule is anything with teeth can bite you, right? Anything with a mouth and teeth can bite you. But they are not aggressive animals at all. They're not predators. So they're herbivores. They eat vegetation. And it's very unlikely that you would get bitten by a manatee. First of all, hopefully you're not anywhere near that close, right? We're observing from a distance. But also they have molars that their teeth are in the very back of their mouth. So it's very unlikely that you could get bitten by a manatee.
More likely to be bitten by humanity than a manatee, Elizabeth, I think.
That's
probably
exactly
how I would sum
right.
that up. Now, you did allude to this earlier that they, surprisingly, because I didn't know any of this, that, you know, they breathe oxygen and they up and down into the water. So somebody's asking really about how long they can they breathe underwater, or how do they breathe? You know, do they come up and get a gasp of air and then go underwater again? How does all that sort of work?
Yep, that's exactly right. So they have lungs just like us. So they come up to the surface. Usually you can just see they have big nostrils on the end of their snout. And that's what you might see breaking the surface. And they take a big, deep breath and then spend most of their lives actually holding their breath underwater. They typically, you know, if they're feeding or traveling, you know, socializing, they might breathe every 3 to 5 minutes, but they can hold their breath when they're resting up to about 15 minutes.
That's wonderful. Now, the questioner who texted in about the alligators has come back to us, Elizabeth, and is okay. saying, so are alligators wimps then? And then, the questioner goes on to say, what about a Dauphin Island cage fight between an alligator and a manatee? I'm not sure how serious that suggestion is, but would you like to comment, Elizabeth?
Oh, man, I think that's out of my realm. But I think, you know, manatees and alligators, they're designed to, you know, do what they need to do. Manatees are designed to eat grass, and alligators are designed to eat things like birds and fish and, frankly, other alligators. So they, you know, they stay in their lanes, and maybe we should just leave it that way.
I love that in the animal kingdom, where they do stay in their lanes in a way that human beings have never been able to stay in our lanes. Do you know what I mean? Now, there's some more serious questions here. Where do they go in the wintertime? Good question.
Yeah, great question. So typically manatees have to go back to peninsular Florida. So the part of Florida that sticks out there, that's more in the south part of Florida. And they typically go to, what we call warm water refuge sites. So people may have even seen, you know, pictures of these big groups of manatees that are either at a warm spring, you know, a spring that pumps out a constant temperature of water, or at a power plant outfall. There are some other types of warm water refuge sites that they use as well, but typically they just have to gather at these sites because they don't do well in temperatures below about 20 degrees Celsius, which is about 68 degrees Fahrenheit, for very long periods of time. And that is our number one, you know, leading cause of distress and death for manatees in Alabama. Is we usually have a few animals every year that don't, for some reason or other, migrate back to Florida mm-hmm. for the winter time, and you know, they simply can't survive. That we know of, they can't survive year round in Alabama waters.
Do you know, Elizabeth, if manatees make it over this side of the Atlantic? Are there any in Europe, or do we get any sort of around the British Isles or up the Thames, anything like that?
No, not that I know of. Your closest ones would probably be, we may even be closer, but yeah, the manatees are, they do travel along the Atlantic coast of the U.S. Mm-hmm. So while we have them on the Gulf Coast, they're also on the Atlantic coast, but no, there are no manatees in the area of Europe. Like I said, they're in the U.S., in the northern parts of South America, and in Africa. And then there's a closely related species called the dugong that people might mm-hmm. be familiar with that lives in the Indo-Pacific. But sadly, no manatees to see in Europe.
Oh, what a shame. Now, we're getting in more specific questions here to do with Alabama, because people are asking where they can see manatees in Mobile Bay. And they're also asking, are they likely to be in Fish River or Dauphin Island? So I guess somebody who wants to see these wonderful creatures, where would you direct them to, Elizabeth?
Yeah, so we do have some hot spots that we've identified over the years. Manatees typically, you know, they go where the food is. So any areas that are kind of shallow, have a lot of vegetation growing, and that's typically our river systems. So we see a lot of manatees in Dog River, which is on the western shore of Mobile Bay, mm-hmm. In around the Orange Beach area where there's a lot of seagrass, and in lower sections of what's called the Mobile Tensaw Delta. People from around this area will be familiar with the Interstate 10 Bayway and the causeway that cross the top of Mobile Bay, and we get a lot of sightings around there. But really, it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time to see a manatee. Mm. There aren't, you know, spots like in Florida where we get hundreds of manatees in one place.
Right.
So I would say, you know, if they, we, and specifically to answer the question about Fish River, we do get sightings in Fish River. And really, you know, they kind of just very broadly use all the areas around Mobile Bay. So if you're out on the water, you know, keep an eye open. You might get lucky. We also have, if people are interested on our website, we have maps where sightings have been documented in previous years. So you could see if a manatee has been seen in your neighborhood before.
It's quite incredible, isn't it, how well documented these creatures are. There's any more of the amount of these questions that are coming through, but we're unfortunately, Elizabeth, we're running out of time. Now, I have visions of you every day sort of standing at Dauphin Island there with a telescope looking out to sea to see where the manatees is. Is that how it works down at your research center?
Not exactly. You know, actually, all these people that are calling in, they are texting in. They are our greatest resource. So when we say we're the Manatee Sighting Network, we're truly a network. You know, we rely on members of the public to report their sightings to us. So I actually spend most of my time talking to people about their manatee sightings and collecting the data. People are generally very excited to report their sightings. And you know, they're typically just thrilled to have seen a manatee. So I definitely love that part of my job. And, you know, hopefully I'll hear from some of the listeners and today and that will call in or go on our website and let us know they've seen a manatee.
Well, to that end, Elizabeth, just tell people officially how they can contact you and your colleagues at the research center and how they can report a manatee and also maybe some of the things that you're interested in the reporting of.
Yeah, definitely. So we have multiple ways you can report. You can follow us on Facebook at Mobile Manatee Sighting Network. You can call our hotline, 1-866-493-5803, or go online to manatee.disl.edu. And I know you're going to be sharing all of this with your listeners as well. And we just want to know some basic information. You know, when and where did you see the manatee? Or manatees, how many were in the group, and, you know, maybe some basic things about their behavior. Were they feeding, socializing, traveling? That's all great data for us to collect.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on the show. I never knew so much about manatees. I feel fully educated now.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
That was Elizabeth Heap from the research center down on Dauphin Island, which is looking out for manatees. You've heard it all. And do contact Elizabeth if you come across one of those wonderful creatures. When we come back, we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And guess what? You're invited to join us. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.